This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Great to have you listening this morning. Wisconsin is experiencing two major political battles right now, the right-to-work legislation passed by the state Senate earlier in the week, and the proposed significant cuts to higher education funding in the state. They are debates that largely skew down partisan lines, but one analyst says they actually have similarities that go deeper than that. Richard Longworth is a senior fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, and he joins us by phone from Chicago. Welcome to the show.
Okay, Mitch, glad to be with you.
Do you have a sense for why the time is now and the place is here for these battles? Things like right to work, things like the battle over higher education. Is there something about Wisconsin or the Midwest that makes it the right time and place?
You know, if it was just Wisconsin or the Midwest, that would be one thing. I don't think it is. This is something that's going on all over. As far as the right-to-work battle, about half the states, 24, have right-to-work laws. Wisconsin would be the 25th. This has been going on for 60 or 70 years. Iowa, states like that, have had right-to-work laws for that long. I think it is just an opportunity when you get Republicans representing the business community, and business simply hates unions. I spend a lot of time talking with business groups, chambers of commerce. The level of venom, really, towards unions, even in this day and age when so few, what, such a small percentage of the workforce belongs to unions, is just astonishing. So when they get the opportunity, yeah, they want to get into these right-to-work laws because it weakens unions. I don't think this has anything to do particularly with the times, except we simply have a lot of Republican-controlled state houses. The decline in support for state universities is something, again, that's been going on for years. I was just looking at some statistics. Back in 1976, the state of Wisconsin provided 44% of the budget of the University of Wisconsin, the Madison. That is now down to 17%, closing in on about one-third of what it was about 30 or 40 years ago. And if Governor Walker's proposals go through, that support will then sink down into single digits. You got to ask yourself, Mitch, at what point does the University of Wisconsin stop being a public university in the sense that the public, the state, supports it? And what does that do to change its mission? Other states, as I said, are facing the same thing. University of Michigan at Ann Arbor is already less than 10%, shrinking fast.
Well, and so is there a fundamental question you think we ought to be asking as we watch these battles take place? I mean, is there a question about, you know, what a state university really is all about that's different today than it was 100 years ago?
Now, I'm hesitant to say anything nice about your governor, especially because I think a lot of what he is doing now is being done to court voters of the Republican Party out in Iowa, getting ready for the caucuses. But the fact is that he has here, inadvertently, raised an issue. And that issue is, what is this Wisconsin idea? And more broadly, what is the obligation and the relationship of a state university to its states? Back when the Land Grant Act was passed, back signed by Abraham Lincoln, back when the Wisconsin idea was founded by the president of the University of Wisconsin, Charles Van Heise, more than a century ago, the idea was that the states and the universities were one and the same. The universities educated the kids in the state and guided the economy of that state, and in return, the state supported the universities. Now, that's breaking down. The states are no longer supporting the universities. The share of state support for universities in most states, as in Wisconsin, has been shrinking over the years and continues to shrink. At the same time, we are in a global economy now, and economies are no longer defined by state lines. And the responsibility of, say, a system like the University of Wisconsin extends far beyond the state lines. Madison is a great big research university, and its research power should be harnessed to doing the kind of research that will power our Midwestern and our national economy in the future. This isn't, you know, this sort of impact doesn't stop at the state lines. The smaller schools in the system are the same thing. Platteville extends its influence over into northwestern Iowa, Racine extends down into northern Illinois. For that matter, a lot of western Wisconsin looks more towards Minneapolis and the University of Minnesota than it does to Madison and the University of Wisconsin. State lines don't mean much anymore economically or educationally. And maybe to cut off the state funding, to cut the state universities free, to turn them, in essence, into private schools, free to serve an extended population, to take on an extended responsibility, is only realistic. Now, this opens up a whole new can of worms when you get into in-state tuition and all that sort of thing. But I mentioned this because this is the way thinking is going. And if you go to a college, a state university, and say, hey, you know, are you talking at all about the privatization of public education? They talk a lot about it a lot. You're not telling them anything they aren't already discussing. It is not a debate that has merged into the public view yet. And if Scott Walker has brought it up there, well, you know, there's some good in everybody.
What about access, though? I mean, you're talking essentially about the output of a public university. What about the input, the people that the university educates and the cost at which it educates them?
Instead of giving this money, and the state, even after Walker's cuts, will still be spending something like $800 million per year, $700 million per year on the state, on the Wisconsin university system. Instead of giving this money to the schools and forcing them to march to the beat of the legislature or the governor or a board of regents or to answer particularly to Wisconsin, one suggestion is that this money be given instead to individual students. If the legislature wants to do something, it can give this in grants to Wisconsin high school students to enable them to attend a college of their choice. In this way, the original aim of the land-grant colleges, which is that the students of the state would be educated, would be continued, would be fulfilled. But the universities would no longer be answerable only to the state of Wisconsin. On the one hand, it's unrealistic to expect the state universities to pay their bills when the state funding is going down, as we see that they're looking elsewhere to pay these bills. First of all, as every parent knows, an increased tuition, and certainly rattling the tin cup at alums on getting more grants, especially on contracts with corporations. And this is the wave of the future. So maybe the thing would be is for the big research universities, like Madison, to really focus on research. Maybe not even do undergraduate education at all, or at least not have freshmen and sophomores. But the students who needed that education then could go to smaller state universities or to private schools around the state or outside the state if they wished, funded by this money from the state legislature that now goes to the students instead of the schools. You'd be amazed how much of discussion on this is going on. So I say this hasn't merged into the public view yet, but there are a lot of people trying to figure out what is the role of public education or higher education in the Midwest and in the nation in the future, given the economic realities.
Would you imagine that the big state schools around the Midwest would seek each other out in sort of better defining what the responsibility of, say, the University of Wisconsin-Madison or Milwaukee is versus the responsibility of the University of Minnesota or Iowa or Michigan?
I would hope they would. They're already doing some. There's more cooperative research. There are more cooperative projects. They are still bound very much by state lines. If you try to get too much into this, legislators scream. But I would see these universities, yes, reaching out to specialize, to do what they do best. I would certainly see them reaching out, as they already are, to other universities around the world as they become more global. I would see them bringing in students from other states and from other nations. At the moment, if a student body school started admitting too many students from out of state or out of country, voters scream and legislators scream. Well, once upon a time, they had a right to scream because they were paying the bills. They don't anymore. So I would see universities reaching out and redefining their missions. You still are located in a certain part. You're still located in Madison or Ann Arbor or Champaign-Urbana, and that's the reality, so there still will be a local identification. You still got football teams on Saturdays, and the whole state will identify with them, and this seems a silly reason to continue this state-focused education, but again, that's reality. People do this. But beyond that, yes, it only makes sense for universities to combine some of their activities to get economy of scale and to really focus each university on what it does best.
Well, and with that in mind, let's circle back for just a moment to the conversation we were having earlier about right to work. And I wonder if there is a parallel that you would draw between where you see public support for the mission of a university vis-a-vis the state where that university is located and public support for unions in a state, which has been waning for some time.
Mitch, I think you're really on to something there. Yes, there is a decline in public support for unions. As you discover in Wisconsin, the backlash against the Walker's initial measures affecting public service unions didn't result in his ouster from office. He won re-election. So unions are having a hard time getting public support, largely because people have a hard time seeing these days what unions are doing for them. Individual union members know that the unions count, but the individual union members are a small share of the population. As far as education goes, you're absolutely right. Once upon a time, you sent your kid to Madison, didn't cost hardly anything, and he got a good education. Those days are gone forever. It's hard to get into Madison, even if you're a resident of Wisconsin, and if you do, even the in-state tuition costs a lot. Costs more than a lot of families can afford, and they're looking at the results, and they're saying, what good is this doing me? Here's my old industrial town. Here's my little farming town. The jobs are going away. The economy is going down. My son or daughter can't find a good job here. They've got to go to Minneapolis or Chicago to find a good job. What's this university doing for me? What's this public education doing for me? And it has evolved into a debate over the purpose of higher education. The question is higher education a public good or a private good? Does it serve the whole society to have a broadly educated population, or does this education mainly confer benefits on the student themselves or the graduate? And when that question begins to be asked, then people say, well, it's not doing anything good for me. It's not doing anything good for the public at large. Why should we pay for it? And that is the political impetus behind this trend in declining state support that we were talking about. So, yes, it very definitely ties into that. This, again, the whole thing ties into the question of globalization. Unions or companies can escape their union obligations simply by outsourcing, by going somewhere where the union cannot follow. Growth and globalization has affected so many old industrial towns in the Midwest and affected so many old farming and mining towns in the Midwest that people see their economies declining, see that the universities can't reverse this, and so tend to point the finger at the nearest possible culprit, which they identify as that big, remote university down, you know, in the People's Republic of Madison.
Well, and so at the end of the day, while globalization might not be the immediate catalyst for these things happening, it is always kind of lurking in the background.
It's something that's been going on for a long time. Right to work, as I said, has been going on for a long time before we had to deal with globalization. The decline in the state support for education has been going on. Well, I was just looking up the Wisconsin figures, and that goes back to 1976, but I suspect it started well before that. Globalization just speeds up a lot of processes that were happening anyhow.
Well, it's all interesting food for thought. Richard Longworth, thank you so much.
Mitch, it's been a pleasure.
Richard Longworth is a senior fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. He's also author of the book Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism. He joined us on the line from Chicago. We'll take a quick break now and then travel to the far western edge of Milwaukee and hear the story of a medical device company making waves in the industry. But it's not the company you might be thinking of. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.